Chapter 24. I have a memorable birthday. I pass over all that happened at school until the anniversary of my birthday came round in March. Except that Steerforth was more to be admired than ever. I remember nothing. He was going away at the end of the half year, if not sooner, and was more spirited and independent than before in my eyes, and therefore more engaging than before. But beyond this I remember nothing. The great remembrance by which that time is marked in my mind seems to have swallowed up all lesser recollections, and to exist alone. It is even difficult for me to believe that there was a gap of full 2 months between my return to Salem House and the arrival of that birthday. I can only understand that the fact was so, because I know it must have been so. Otherwise I should feel convinced that there was no interval, and that the one occasion trod upon the other's heels. How well I recollect the kind of day it was. I smell the fog that hung about the place. I see the hoar frost, ghostly, through it. I feel my rimy hair fall clammy on my cheek. I look along the dim perspective of the schoolroom, with a sputtering candle here and there to light up the foggy morning, and the breath of the boys reading and smoking in the raw cold as they blow upon their fingers, and tap their feet upon the floor. It was after breakfast, and we had been summoned in from the playground, when Mr. Sharp entered and said, "David Copperfield is to go into the parlor." Apostrophe, I expected a hamper from Peggotty, and brightened at the order. Some of the boys about me put in their claim, not to be forgotten in the distribution of the good things, as I got out of my seat with great alacrity. "Don't hurry, David," apostrophe said Mr. Sharp. "There's time enough, my boy, don't hurry." Apostrophe, I might have been surprised by the feeling tone in which he spoke, if I had given it a thought. But I gave it none until afterwards. I hurried away to the parlor, and there I found Mr. Creakle, sitting at his breakfast with a cane and a newspaper before him, and Mrs. Creakle with an opened letter in her hand. But no hamper. "David Copperfield," apostrophe said Mrs. Creakle, leading me to a sofa, and sitting down beside me. "I want to speak to you very particularly. I have something to tell you, my child." Apostrophe, Mr. Creakle, at whom of course I looked, shook his head without looking at me, and stopped up a sigh with a very large piece of buttered toast. "You are too young to know how the world changes every day," apostrophe said Mrs. Creakle, "and how the people in it pass away. But we all have to learn it, David. Some of us when we are young, some of us when we are old, some of us at all times of our lives." Apostrophe, I looked at her earnestly. "When you came away from home at the end of the vacation," apostrophe said Mrs. Creakle, after a pause, "were they all well?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, after another pause, "was your mama well?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, I trembled without distinctly knowing why, and still looked at her earnestly, making no attempt to answer. "Because," apostrophe said she, "I grieve to tell you that I hear this morning your mama is very ill." Apostrophe, a mist rose between Mrs. Creakle and me, and her figure seemed to move in it for an instant. Then I felt the burning tears run down my face, and it was steady again. "She is very dangerously ill," apostrophe she added. I knew all now. "She is dead." Apostrophe, there was no need to tell me so. I had already broken out into a desolate cry, and felt an orphan in the wide world. "She was very kind to me. She kept me there all day, and left me alone sometimes. And I cried, and wore myself to sleep, and awoke and cried again. When I could cry no more, I began to think, and then the oppression on my breast was heaviest, and my grief a dull pain that there was no ease for. And yet my thoughts were idle, not intent on the calamity that weighed upon my heart, but idly loitering near it. I thought of our house shut up and hushed. I thought of the little baby, who, Mrs. Creakle said, had been pining away for some time, and who, they believed, would die too. I thought of my father's grave in the churchyard, by our house, and of my mother lying there beneath the tree I knew so well. I stood upon a chair when I was left alone and looked into the glass to see how red my eyes were and how sorrowful my face. I considered, after some hours were gone, if my tears were really hard to flow now, as they seemed to be, what, in connection with my loss, it would affect me most to think of when I drew near home, for I was going home to the funeral. I am sensible of having felt that a dignity attached to me among the rest of the boys, and that I was important in my affliction. If ever child were stricken with sincere grief, I was. But I remember that this importance was a kind of satisfaction to me when I walked in the playground that afternoon while the boys were in school. When I saw them glancing at me out of the windows as they went up to their classes, I felt distinguished and looked more melancholy and walked slower. When school was over and they came out and spoke to me, I felt it rather good in myself not to be proud to any of them, and to take exactly the same notice of them all as before. I was to go home next night, not by the mail, but by the heavy night coach, which was called the Farmer, and was principally used by country people traveling short intermediate distances upon the road. We had no storytelling that evening, and Traddles insisted on lending me his pillow. I don't know what good he thought it would do me, for I had one of my own. But it was all he had to lend, poor fellow, except a sheet of letter paper full of skeletons, and that he gave me at parting, as a soother of my sorrows, and a contribution to my peace of mind. I left Salem House upon the morrow afternoon. I little thought then that I left it, never to return. We traveled very slowly all night, and did not get into Yarmouth before 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. I looked out for Mr. Barkis, but he was not there, and instead of him a fat, short-winded, merry-looking, little old man in black, with rusty little bunches of ribbons at the knees of his breeches, black stockings, and a broad-brimmed hat, came puffing up to the coach window, and said, "Master Copperfield?" ?
"Yes, sir."
? "Will you come with me, young sir, if you please?" ? He said, opening the door, "and I shall have the pleasure of taking you home." ? I put my hand in his, wondering who he was, and we walked away to a shop in a narrow street, on which was written Omer, Draper, Taylor, Haberdasher, Funeral Furnisher, and C. It was a close and stifling little shop, full of all sorts of clothing, made and unmade, including one window full of beaver hats and bonnets. We went into a little back parlor behind the shop, where we found three young women at work on a quantity of black materials, which were heaped upon the table, and little bits and cuttings of which were littered all over the floor. There was a good fire in the room, and a breathless smell of warm black crepe. I did not know what the smell was then, but I know now. The three young women, who appeared to be very industrious and comfortable, raised their heads to look at me, and then went on with their work. Stitch, stitch, stitch. At the same time there came from a workshop across a little yard outside the window, a regular sound of hammering, that kept a kind of tune. Rat-tat-tat, 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 without any variation. "Well, ? said my conductor to one of the three young women. "How do you get on, Minnie?" ? "We shall be ready by the trying on time, ? she replied gaily, without looking up. "Don't you be afraid, father." ? Mr. Omer took off his broad-brimmed hat, and sat down and panted. He was so fat that he was obliged to pant some time before he could say, "That's right. ? Father. ? said Minnie, playfully. "What a porpoise you do grow. ? "Well, I don't know how it is, my dear, ? he replied, considering about it. "I am rather so. ? You are such a comfortable man, you see, ? said Minnie. "You take things so easy. ? No use taking them otherwise, my dear, ? said Mr. Omer. "No, indeed, ? returned his daughter. "We are all pretty gay here, thank heaven. Ain't we, father?" Apostrophe, I hope so, my dear, apostrophe said Mr. Omer. As I have got my breath now, I think I'll measure this young scholar. Would you walk into the shop, Master Copperfield? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I preceded Mr. Omer, in compliance with his request, and after showing me a roll of cloth which he said was extra super, and too good morning for anything short of parents, he took my various dimensions, and put them down in a book. While he was recording them, he called my attention to his stock in trade, and to certain fashions which he said had just come up, and to certain other fashions which he said had just gone out. And by that sort of thing we very often lose a little mint of money, apostrophe said Mr. Omer. But fashions are like human beings. They come in, nobody knows when, why, or how. And they go out, nobody knows when, why, or how. Everything is like life, in my opinion, if you look at it in that point of view. Apostrophe, I was too sorrowful to discuss the question, which would possibly have been beyond me under any circumstances. And Mr. Omer took me back into the parlor, breathing with some difficulty on the way. He then called down a little breakneck range of steps behind the door. Bring up that tea and bread and butter. Apostrophe, apostrophe, which, after some time, during which I sat looking about me and thinking, and listening to the stitching in the room and the tune that was being hammered across the yard, appeared on a tray, and turned out to be for me. I have been acquainted with you, apostrophe said Mr. Omer, after watching me for some minutes, during which I had not made much impression on the breakfast, for the black things destroyed my appetite. I have been acquainted with you a long time, my young friend. Apostrophe, have you, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, all your life, apostrophe said Mr. Omer. I may say before it. I knew your father before you. He was 5'9½", and he lays in 5 20 foot of ground. Apostrophe, rat-tat-tat, 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 apostrophe across the yard. He lays in 5 20 foot of ground, if he lays in a fraction, apostrophe said Mr. Omer, pleasantly. It was either his request or direction, I forget which. Apostrophe, do you know how my little brother is, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I inquired. Mr. Omer shook his head. Rat-tat-tat, rat-tat-tat, rat-tat-tat. Apostrophe, he is in his mother's arms, apostrophe said he. Oh, poor little fellow. Is he dead? Apostrophe, don't mind it more than you can help, apostrophe said Mr. Omer. Yes, the baby's dead. Apostrophe, my wounds broke out afresh at this intelligence. I left the scarcely tasted breakfast, and went and rested my head on another table, in a corner of the little room, which Minnie hastily cleared, lest I should spot the morning that was lying there with my tears. She was a pretty, good-natured girl, and put my hair away from my eyes with a soft, kind touch, but she was very cheerful at having nearly finished her work, and being in good time, and was so different from me. Presently the tune left off, and a good-looking young fellow came across the yard into the room. He had a hammer in his hand, and his mouth was full of little nails, which he was obliged to take out before he could speak. Well, Joram, apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Omer, how do you get on? Apostrophe, all right, apostrophe said Joram. Done, sir. Apostrophe, Minnie colored a little, and the other two girls smiled at one another. What, you were at it by candlelight last night, when I was at the club, then? Were you? Apostrophe said Mr. Omer, shutting up one eye. Yes, apostrophe said Joram. As you said we could make a little trip of it, and go over together, if it was done, Minnie and me and you. Apostrophe, oh. I thought you were going to leave me out altogether, apostrophe said Mr. Omer, laughing till he coughed. Apostrophe as you was so good, as to say that, apostrophe resumed the young man, why I turned to with a will, you see. Will you give me your opinion of it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I will, apostrophe said Mr. Omer, rising. My dear, and he stopped and turned to me. Would you like to see your apostrophe? No, father, apostrophe mini interposed. I thought it might be agreeable, my dear, apostrophe said Mr. Omer. But perhaps you're right. Apostrophe, I can't say how I knew it was my dear, dear mother's coffin that they went to look at. I had never heard one making, I had never seen one that I know of. But it came into my mind what the noise was while it was going on, and when the young man entered, I am sure I knew what he had been doing. The work being now finished, the two girls, whose names I had not heard, brushed the shreds and threads from their dresses, and went into the shop, to put that to rights, and wait for customers. Minnie stayed behind to fold up what they had made, and pack it in two baskets. This she did upon her knees, humming a lively little tune the while. Joram, who I had no doubt was her lover, came in and stole a kiss from her, while she was busy. He didn't appear to mind me at all, and said her father was gone for the chaise, and he must make haste, and get himself ready. Then he went out again, and then she put her thimble and scissors in her pocket, and stuck. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.